is, you guys only knew the silliness that happens in our pre-planning for this show. Just, it's just me and Marcus cutting up and singing stupid songs and really stupid voices.
I'm really good at dumb songs.
Yeah, you are.
I'm really good at it.
Hello, legions. Hello, one and all. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another exciting edition of the Whatcha Been Watching podcast. I am your host, the marvelous Mike D, joined as always by my co-host, cohort, youngest brother,
MD3, Marcus Dudley, checking in on a YOU. What is going on out there in podcast land? We are broadcasting with our triple digit episodes now. My goodness.
Yes.
Right here from the, Lake Jackson Studios of the Whatcha Been Watching fame. You know, coming out here.
Ye old sinkhole.
Mm-hmm. Ye old stomping grounds, as it were. How are you today, my brother?
That's a loaded question, sir.
Michael's gonna lie. He's gonna lie. He's gonna lie. Anyways.
I have not been in a good headspace lately, but I know that I haven't been, and so it's been a difficult, trying to fake it till you make it kind of thing. Or, you know, like, I don't know. It's like, don't think about the pink elephant, you know?
Yeah. No, trust me. I get it. It's a... thematically, that'll tie into something we're going to talk about a little bit later. But in the meantime, you know, I'm sure all the listeners would agree. We're all here if you need us, man.
Oh, so, yeah.
It's, but no, I get it, though. It's sometimes
it's mostly just got to get out of my own head. And, you know, if I could get out of my own way, I might actually succeed in life. But, you know.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
The problem is everywhere I go, I'm there.
There you go. Yep. I bring me with me, that scandalous man. Well, you know what might help you is if you just take a little moment to just listen to our lovely intro music by the always wonderful Ketza, Always Bright. Just lie to yourself a little further.
What a ham-fisted segue.
You could just lie to yourself.
I love it.
Yeah.
That was great.
But no, and other than that, though, you know, if you need some cheer-up music, you could always reach out to our good friend, Mr. A1. He provides all the lovely, lovely interlude music. Anytime we got special music numbers in the show,
that's
it is
right.
Brought to you by Mr. A1. You can find him at a1reality.music@gmail.com. I'm trying to tell you, if you have any kind of custom music that you need for anything, or you're just a singer, songwriter, up-and-coming artist, whatever you want to do,
that's
reach
right.
out to him. The man has got the flavors for you. I'm trying to tell you, the man is a quadruple threat. The man sings, the man raps, the man does beats. What else does he do, M-Daddies?
I heard he might be Banksy.
Oh, he might be?
I mean, might be.
I mean, who knows?
Disprove it.
I know, right? Disprove it, yeah. Fight the negative. That's always
right.
The fun part.
That's
dude,
right.
Disproving that something that doesn't exist is fighting a ghost, dude.
Right, right, exactly.
I've been put in those positions right. by yeah. some people before. You're like, prove to me you didn't do the thing that...
Right. Like, prove to me you're not cheating. Like, I don't know how to do that other than by not cheating. Yeah. I don't... How do I... I mean...
I've been guilty too now.
I ain't saying...
Yeah. I'm not... But there's been times otherwise. Right. Like, yeah, disprove Listen. The thing you didn't do. Right. You're like, I don't know how to do that. So we'll put Mr. A1 in that quandary, see if he can use that as one of his extra abilities. So, but yeah, you can always reach out to us if you do have any questions, if you do want to reach out and just go, you know, I heard you guys were in a bad headspace. Let's hear some cheering up. We do have an email that you can reach us at whatchabeenwatchinpodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram at whatchabeenwatchin. Where else can they find us, my brother?
You can find us on facebook.com/DudleyBrosPodcast, or we are on finally on YouTube at WBW Podcast.
We will pander. We will grovel. Please give us a like
plus,
and subscribe
you know,
while you're there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on your line.
No, you're good.
I was going to say, plus, we out there in them streets.
Oh,
you know?
Always.
Yeah, you know.
Always.
Yeah. I was selling homemade cans of salsa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just me peeling the label off of Pace and just putting it in a can, but, you know.
I like it. Hey, everyone's got to have a hustle. I've just been drinking way too many zero sugar Mountain Dews. That's what I've been doing.
I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew.
I'm all jacked up. I'm coming at people like a spider monkey.
We'll scissor kick you in the back of the head, Chip.
Yeah, man. Throwing somebody's war medals off the bridge. What a great day. But, man, this is going to be a light episode. We did some heavy lifting for 100, if y'all only knew.
Oh,
like
Lord.
I said, it was a little reveal in our Facebook/Instagram stories. That might be why Michael's struggling. The tenacity that my partner over here in crime showed to get that one recorded and in the books was boy, what could Murphy's Law was in full effect that day.
Jesus,
everything from technical aspects to just re-recording.
So oh, man.
Not trying to give away all the secrets, but if there was a weird pacing issue that you noticed on episode 100,
that's
things
why.
Were re-recorded a lot. We're trying to hit the same marks,
right.
And still trying to have enthusiasm doing it.
Yeah. Trying not to have the exact same conversation, but also like, although he did make that good point, so I need to tag that up. Like, it's a weird. Yeah.
By the sixth time we recorded, Michael was making my points. I was playing his role. We were so familiar with the script that it was like just. it's like that was a good joke. That one landed. That one didn't. All right, you say. All right, cool. Whatever. Let's get it through.
Yeah. Oh man.
So,
yeah. That so was
shout out to you, man, truly.
Well, there's a certain point where you're already waist deep in the sewer. Like, why are you worried? Just go ahead and just dunk your head under, man. Let's just get it done, you know?
Yeah, so we were talking about that, about it raining one day. Like, once you get so wet, you know, like when your every aspect of you is wet, right. Socks, shoes to your bones, you're just like, I can throw my umbrella in the trash.
Right,
like,
right. I'm just in the rain at this point.
In for a penny, in for a pound of this situation.
Right.
So I appreciate you doing that. But that was a doozy, though, man. So
I knew if we took a break and I went home, we wouldn't have done episode 100. It would have been like, nah, we did enough. Let's just end it on a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
20 minutes in.
Yeah, it was brutal, man. So I appreciate you on that one. So
it's all good.
It's gonna be a little light lifting around here today.
Oh,
so if you're wondering
God.
Why we're ham fisting in our segues and stuff like that, there's a reason. Your boys earned a respite.
That's right. Keep it nice and breezy.
But yeah, man, it's part of the other reason why it's going to be light lifting. And this is my about this time of the year. You can probably see where I'm going. It's sports time. So I've been busy. You know, things are kicking off into full gear. The Seminoles are not an embarrassment, which is just wonderful for me because it gives me so much pride in my city to, you know, see things, our economy boom again.
Yeah.
It's all based on that team.
So. I will say that my love of college football is directly proportional to how well Florida State is doing in that particular season.
Yeah, I learned that last season. We've never been that bad before, and I hated the entire sport. I mean, fuck NIL, fuck the transfer portal. This shit's the Wild West. And then the Eagles pro started doing well. My pro team started doing well. So I'm like, maybe I'm just a pro sports guy now. Like, I flipped on a dime, which, again, you know what a diehard I am. We got to be really bad for me to be out on it. I'm the type of guy that listens to the sports talk radio and all that. So part of it's just been what free time I have had. I've had some obligations that I've been trying to do sports related wise. And
don't you love it when your pastime or your hobby becomes like the thing you have to do?
Like, yeah.
It's such a fine line of like, even with you know, us doing this, like there's moments where I'm like, oh man, I really don't have time for that. But like, I gotta, cause you know, but I don't know. Maybe that's the whole point is you gotta, your obligations have to also be something that you enjoy doing.
I mean, I'll tell you this. If we get paid for this, we have one of the coolest jobs in the world.
Yeah.
There's just one big hurdle we got to overcome. And that's monetizing this shit. So you will listen to those ads on Spotify.
Coming next season, more ads.
More advertisements.
Welcome to the What You've Been Advertising podcast.
I know, right? Another break from our sponsor. Another break from our sponsor. Nah, there's a fine line where it just gets unlistenable at that point. But we're not there yet. So. On that note.
I'm trying to be.
We're trying to be, man. Look, but no, seriously, it like all jokes aside, we will pander. But like all the little likes, all the on YouTubes and the subscribes and the this and that, it all helps. It all kind of helps. I mean, you guys already know this, so I understand that.
Just feed the algorithm.
Yeah, just help your boys out if and when you can. If you know somebody that you want to just steal their phone and just subscribe for them, do them a favor. They'll appreciate it. Because one day they're going to be sitting around going, I wonder who the greatest movie villain of all time is.
That's right.
And you can go, that's already been answered. Here you go.
Funny enough, you should ask.
It's already been settled. No, don't have them write us in. That's the one thing don't write us in about. After we decide the greatest movie villain, you have like a month. After that, it is written in pen.
Yeah, once we tabulize and finalize that bracket busters, don't be coming up to us.
You can give us feedback. Oh, yeah.
You can give Marcus feedback.
Yeah, even then, you've heard it on the episode where I write whoever won in pen. And like, I don't know, I might change my vote. Nope, it's in pen. And there's other times I haven't written it in pen yet, and I'll still hear the argument. So I'm... just bossy. That's all. I have all the unwritten rules up here. All right, that's
enough. He who controls the pen controls the crown.
I mean, pretty much. Michael's got the computer, so I have to bid for power wherever I can. He could chop me straight out of every episode if he wants to.
That's why you got to be so witty and charming.
I got to do something, man. We got to do something.
Like,
but
why does Marcus always make such good points? Well, because he has to earn his goddamn spot, yeah, quite frankly.
Fighting for playtime here. Trying to put tape out there for other podcasts to pick me up. Speaking of sports. Anyways, what we are going to do today, Michael, we've had enough small talk. We're going to dive into episode 101 with my favorite, one of my personal favorite questions to ask you. What you been watching, my guy?
My man, I recently rewatched the, I want to say 1992 Bobby Z classic.
Bobby Zemeckis?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Uh-oh, where are we going with this? Because he's a what you been watching Wall of Famer.
Hear me
first
out on
round.
This. Hear me out on this. We got Goldie Hawn on one side.
Goldie Hawn's?
Goldie Hawn's, right? On the other, Meryl Streep's.
You got the Streep's?
The Streep's. In the middle, Bruce Willis's.
And they're meeting right here in the middle. That is Bruce Willis?
That is the movie that is called Death Becomes Her.
That movie is my shit. No, I'm just kidding. I've never seen it, I don't think. I think it was on Comedy Central one time. And yeah, because we talked about this on the podcast. They played It and I think War of the Roses.
Okay.
Back to back. And so I mix those up all the time. I was like a home sit, or maybe I was just bailing on school, or it was a Saturday or something. I was just sitting on the couch like doing nothing all day. And I was like in and out of naps with those two movies playing. And I'm like, which one are we in?
Okay, yeah.
I know a lot of people love this movie, though.
It's really, really funny. I honestly probably have not seen it since it came out in like 92, or maybe not 92. I might have been too young for it then, but like shortly, you know, mid-90s, whatever. But probably have not seen this movie in, God, going on 20 years at least.
Oh, for real?
And I got to say, it really, really, really holds up. I think it's very, very cleverly written. It's a lot of dark humor. Bruce Willis is just acting his ass off in this. You know, he plays this sort of nebbish, you know, simping husband who's just, you know, he drinks too much and he's just spiraling out of control and losing his career. And
what is the plot of the movie? Because,
okay,
are they fighting over Bruce Willis or something like that?
Essentially, yeah, yeah. Bruce Willis was with Goldie Hawn, and Meryl Streep, who is this up-and-coming actress, steals him away, marries him, and then Goldie Hawn gets fat, goes crazy, goes to a mental asylum, spends 7 years trying to think of a revenge plot, comes back. Side plot B is Meryl Streep is an aging actress 7 years later and losing her, you know, like sort of losing her beauty in her mind. So she goes and sees this crazy witch lady who gives her a magical potion that's going to keep her young forever. What she doesn't tell her is that it essentially turns into her a zombie. And so Goldie Hawn comes back. She's super hot, meets up with Bruce Willis and convinces him to kill Meryl Streep and run away with her. They try to push her down a flight of stairs and she lives. And then there's this whole like, you're a zombie. How, this is a medical miracle. It's hysterical. It, like, I'm really, really like deadpanning it, but
no, it's
very zany and like madcap. It's just like once she takes that potion, it's just wild antics.
Nice. A little Weekend at Bernie's in there. It feels
a little
like,
bit,
a little
the
spirit
bit.
Of
yeah.
At least.
Yeah. There's a twist where we find out that Goldie Hawn also has taken that serum, but it's not revealed until a very crucial point in the plot.
I see. Way to go, Bobby Zemeckis. Right. Keeping those reins tight.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's
yeah,
a friend
yeah.
of the show. We can call him Bobby, by
Bobby
the way.
Z's.
Bobby Z.
Yeah, yeah. And
by the way, I love one of our what you've been watching Wall of Fame things is we just cling on to certain people. And we're just like, nope, this guy. and we don't pivot at all. It was like Renner early on and certain people were just yeah. like, yep, Bobby Zemeckis was one of them.
Taraji P. Henson.
Yep. Yeah, yep. We're just like, nope, that's our person.
That's it. That's our Avengers right there.
Yep, yep. So Bobby Zemeckis, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot where I was going with that.
Oh, my bad. I stopped your train of thought. You were saying it was wild and zany antics that kick in. I was saying
yes,
it was in the
yes,
spirit of...
Yes, it's a lot of body work for all parties involved. I mean, like, Bruce Willis, when he finds out that his wife is dead, but not dead, and like he basically pushes her down a flight of stairs and then goes to call Goldie Hawn, like, I killed her. It's finally done. You know, you and I can be together. And she's like, you idiot. Don't call me. You know, what if somebody's listening on the line? Like, fuck, like, I'll be over in a minute. And then as he's on the phone with her freaking out and like, you know, breathing heavy and, you know, sweat pouring out of his face, Meryl Streep is in the background unfolding herself like an origami swan.
Nice.
And yeah. You know, she slowly stands up and her, you know, puts her knee back into place. And then her arm, which is wrapped around her neck, goes, you know, crickety crack. And basically there's this whole comedic bit where she confronts Bruce Willis and her head is completely on backwards. So she's walking backwards and trying to interact with him, but she can't quite figure out why her body isn't responding like it normally does. And then he finally just tells her, like, Helen, look at your ass. And she looks straight down and she's like, I can see my ass. Why?
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Bruce Willis with a comedic chiming or comedic timing. I botched that, but whatever.
That's all right.
Yeah. No, that's good, man. I think Bruce Willis has more range than... There's times he can deliver some flat performances.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to be mean. Like, everyone's got a bad day. But, like, when he's on, he's... There's not much he can't do. He can be funny. He can be serious. He can... You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So, I don't know.
And Meryl Streep is, of course, you know, like... I think this is her also getting a chance to spread her comedic chops. She did the funniest thing, and it's not even, I don't think she meant it as a joke. It was just funny to me because it's Meryl Streep. There's a scene where she's standing in Bruce Willis's face and she's like chewing him out and like, you know, talking him down. She's like, you're a alcoholic undertaker, you know, all of your customers would give me more action than you do because you're flaccid. And then she says flaccid like in this really weird way, like flaccid, and like wiggles her tongue. And it just cracked me up so much to see Meryl Streep just waggle her tongue and say the word flaccid. I was dying laughing. And it's not like, I don't think
there's no punchline.
There's no punchline to it. It's just the fact that, like, wow, way to go, Meryl Streep. It's and really like
chewing scenery, man.
Yeah. It just, I probably rewound that scene about three times and it was cracking me up every single time.
It's weird, man. Like, that, I guess, I sometimes think that people in the industry know stuff that, like, we don't in terms of, like, how movies are made, people's level of preparation and things like that. I mean, that's not something that we typically as the audience will ever know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been a time where, and this is, people overuse this word. If you say something's overrated, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you think it's trash. Like, I could, if it's regarded as an A+, but I think it's overrated because it's a B+, or I have it as an A-, it's slightly overrated.
Right. You're not saying it's a failure. Just
I'm not saying it's trash.
That's ranked higher than it should be.
Yeah, and so people, because of the extreme polarity of the internet, people go, oh, it's must be 5 stars or 1 stars at all times. If you say, oh, it's overrated. But there was a time where I was thought Meryl Streep was kind of overrated. And again, kind of. And again, why I bring up that whole like level of preparation thing is then you like hear actors talk about her and all everyone says is like, she's the best. And it's not even like the whole like, oh, speak well about your coworkers because you're on a press tour together.
Right,
everyone
right.
is like, she's the best. Like, you don't understand. Like, and so I feel like a lot of the Academy nominations and things like that, again, I'm not going to get into what's earned. I have no effing idea. I just pretend to know. But like, I feel like some of that is just inside kind of baseball being like, trust me.
Oh, for sure.
Like, when we said go on this set, there wasn't a single day that she wasn't prepared. We shot for 12 hours straight that day, and she didn't miss a line
right.
in character all day. And it was like, so I feel like there's got to be some of that, because there are times where everyone is like, oh my God, this performance is riveting by Meryl Streep. And I'm like, she was fine in it. No negative notes,
sure,
but I wasn't
sure.
like moved by it. And does that make any sense, though?
Sure.
I'm not taking a shot at her, but like, I've heard performances where, like, I think there was a couple of them where, again, not a bad performance, nothing negative to say, nothing like she sucked in it. I just wasn't like, and then it's like the talk of the town for the entire Oscar season. And I'm like, I just don't get it.
Maybe there's something to sometimes a subdued performance is the best performance. You know, if you're constantly the one that's got to be the one drawing attention or especially as a character, you know what I mean? Like, it's that gets a little played out, you know, like some, you know, somebody like Susan Sarandon, who has a really good reach of she could do you know, silly comedy movies. She can do, you know, kind of the femme fatale. She could do the loving mother thing. She could do
the magical vagine.
Yeah, the magical vagine. Right, right, right. But
shout out to Bill Durham, or Bull Durham.
But you know what I mean? Like, so, like, yeah. Sometimes you don't always have to be the most extreme character within the stories. Like, sometimes you just need to be that person.
Yeah, and that's true. And I think maybe I'm giving myself too much credit here. I think I'm a smart enough moviegoer to understand that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where I don't mean, oh, it has to be the biggest performance. I'm not saying that either. I think, for example, Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant was fairly subdued for most of it, but he also just did the most acting. It was sure. Like he was in every scene.
Right, it's right.
Like he's getting mauled by bears. It was like he just did so much that it's like, yeah, I get it. So I don't know. I think I'm smart enough to pick up on that, but I don't mean necessarily like, oh, it was a flat performance, anything like that. It's just, I don't know. I'm fine with things being subdued. I don't need things to be boisterous and over the top for it to be a quote unquote good performance. But for a long time, I thought that, and then you'll see her in something and you're like, oh yeah, it's because she has no holes in her game, as it
right.
were. It's like if she's Jordan, it's like, oh, she can also be defensive player of the year. She can also put, you know what I mean? Like whatever the game asks you to do to win, she can do that. So, and again, I'm not saying, oh, overrated. I'm not saying nothing like that. I guess maybe I am a little bit, but no, I'm not trying to take a shot. Like, she's accomplished more than I ever will. So.
And how many Oscars do you have?
Zero. How many nominations? Zero. How many people know my name? About four. So, but then, like I said, on the flip side of that, I'll think that for a while, and then I'll go back and watch a performance and be like, yeah, she's pretty much incredible.
Yep.
I get it.
Oh, maybe not. Okay.
Yeah. So that was long-winded, though. But I say all that to say, when you said you brought up her comedic chops, I can see her being funny if she wants to be, just by doing a tongue waggle going like, and her tongue imitating a flaccid weenie. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
Or implying that just right. by a subtle motion. It's like, or not so subtle motion, whatever. So yeah, she's got the goods.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I would highly, highly recommend it. It's there's some really, really good special effects in it. I mean, basically Goldie Hawn and Meryl Streep just tear each other apart. I mean, quite literally at some points. There's a whole scene where they're just got done with a fight and Meryl Streep's neck is broken and she's having to hold it up by her, you know, by her hair. Goldie Hawn's got a big gaping hole in her in the center mass and they're poking fun at each other and, you know, like Three Stooges almost kind of humor. So,
May I ask you something?
Sure.
Once upon a time, there was a song by Brandy and Monica called The Boy Is Mine.
Oh, I remember that one, yeah.
Okay, and at the very end of that...
Isn't that Mekhi Phifer was the boy?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
See, Michael, you know where I'm going with this. And at the end of said music video, Mekhi Phifer goes to holler at one of them, and the door opens, and both of them, both Brandy and Monica, are there. Ooh, quite the pivot at the very end of a music video, right?
Right.
Is there a pivot in this where they both realize that we don't need to be fighting over Bruce Willis? Much like the famed Brandy and Monica song, The Boy Is Mine.
Not really. Like they're basically lifelong frenemies. Like they've known each other since, I guess, middle school or whatever. And they've always just sort of been those girls who, you know, like, yeah, they're invited to the party, but they're going to spend the entire time talking shit about the other one.
I see.
So no, they never really. Bruce Willis just sort of escapes, and they sort of let him go, but it's still to their detriment because now they're locked into like having to be with each other for the rest of eternity.
Careful, Licorice.
Exactly.
You wanted to live forever, and yet here you are.
Exactly. Exactly.
That was my question, though. I know it was a long walk to get there, but I'm proud of myself for bringing that up.
No.
I just picture in the video in this movie that being a plot point, being like, why are we even fighting over Bruce Willis? Have we lost our own plot thread here?
No. If it wasn't Bruce Willis, they would still be finding. I mean,
I gotcha.
And they do find other reasons to argue and bicker and all that stuff anyway. So it's the boy is inconsequential.
Okay, I gotcha. That'll be our sponsor later. All right. Well, what do you want to rate it? Or you want to keep talking about it or?
Let's see. I am going to rate it. I'm going to rate it two vials of Eternal Serum. Vita, what is it? Vita Infinita.
Nice. What'd that mean? Chalupa number five or something?
It means live forever.
Oh, okay. I'll be listening.
Yeah.
Well, all right, my dear brother. On to other things. What else you been watching?
Recently, the kids have been on an Elemental kick.
Pixar movie?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
yes,
I've seen that one.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, you know, it's a cute little Romeo, Juliet kind of, you know, star-crossed lovers kind of thing. You know, one guy is made of water, the girl is made of fire, so you do the math.
Yeah, Juliet and Romeo weren't quite as resistant initially as the fire chick in this one, though.
No, I just mean in terms of, you know, from two separate houses that can never be aligned. You know?
Yeah, I gotcha.
God, try to bring a little Shakespeare in class into the podcast.
Yeah, and I was saying you're wrong because of my own knowledge of Shakespeare, the one play. I'll draw the line on the one thing I know. That's okay. It. The rest, you could have said any other one. I'd been like, that's right. Hamlet did do that. Something about Othello? I don't know. Anyways, no, I hear you, though. It is in the same vein. But what else, though? What else did you like about it? Or what else did you think about it? Because I have my own thoughts.
Like I said, it's a really cute story. It's not really my favorite Pixar movie. I hate to say it's heavy-handed because it is a really light movie, but the whole point of, like, can't we all just get along? Or, like, hey, interracial dating is okay. I was like, okay, I kind of thought we would resolve that issue, but cool, that's fine.
Yeah, and I agree. I thought it was kind of middling in the sense of, it really just felt like, at one point there was a movie, it wasn't Pixar, but it was the Emoji Movie. And I just felt like that was just the whole character's name was meh. It was a meh version of Inside Out. I felt this was kind of the same thing of just it trying to be like, oh, the water is this and the fire represents that. And it just kind of felt a little too aligned.
What do you mean? The water, like,
being hot-headed and temperamental and water being cool and sensitive. It felt like it kind of was trying to ride the coattails of Inside Out a little bit in terms of like what they represent emotionally, which I guess fits the characters, but to me it was too close to home for that. And Inside Out is just a far better version of that.
I would agree with that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The animation in this is beautiful. The one thing I really liked about it, though, and this is just kind of me trying to pay attention to things, I liked the way the city worked amongst all the like burrows or whatever, as it were.
Sure.
Just like the little details in the background of like how does water use transportation? How does fire use their transportation? How does, you know, all the different elements, like their little sections of the city and the inner workings of kind of what makes their community the community.
Like cloud portion and sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
It is very much like,
just looking at background details in terms of like what animators do. It, like making the world make sense in terms of how would all these intertwine and intermingle and why there is some form of separation, at least a little bit, but just how their own little sections of the city kind of operate as their own individual thing, I thought was kind of cute and I thought it was kind of creative, some of the little things they did there. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I agree. It was, to me, the movie was kind of middling.
I will say, I mean, as it rightly should, with two characters that are made of fire and water, the motion effects, like when they have fire effects or when people are, you know, splashing in water or whatever, it looks really, really, really good. Like it doesn't look hokey. It doesn't, like, some of the visual effects in this movie are really, really pretty. Like there's a scene where Ember, the fire lady, is meeting with Wade, the water guy, and they're just sort of finding how to cope with each other and like sort of get along. And so she's, you know, jumping from crystal to crystal and burning different colors because different elements burn at different colors, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, he's like, oh, well, check this out. So he takes off across the lake and starts skiing around and makes this beautiful rainbow and then makes a double rainbow. And, you know, it's them, you know, kind of flirting a little bit, but also kind of just showing off and getting to know each other. And it's all the effects in it are so beautiful to watch and so, like, engaging.
No, I mean, Pixar could make a photorealistic movie if they chose to. The ability is there. You're never going to watch a Pixar movie. Some are better than others, but you can't ever call it poor animation.
No.
You may not like the art direction, but like, believe me, if you watch the movie that they did called Soul, if you look at just the shots in the background, the actual, you know, humanized characters or whatever look a certain way and are cartoonish. But if you look at the shots in the background, it looks like damn near a real shot of New York, or like they'll play, like it'll show a room with like a piano or something like that, and it looks like just they animated over a photo of a grand piano,
right?
So they're capable of doing it, and they, so again, it's an art direction thing in terms of, okay, what do we want it to look like? Everything from the rounding of the noses, how pointy is things in this world, how, you know, so. But the animation itself is always, that's not ever going to be a miss on Pixar,
right?
You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So, but no, you brought up kind of what I was trying to say about the cities, like the inner, they thought very creatively about what is it that makes the water, you know, work? How, what is important in their society? What is important in their culture, as opposed to, you know, and she wants to, what, be a glass blower or something like that?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's also sort of an immigrant tale, you know, like her father came to.
Her father's like, make falafel. And she's like, I'll make falafel. And then, but she's, she really, like, I don't want to make falafel,
right,
though,
exactly,
for real.
Exactly. Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, and then Wade is a city worker who finds some problems in her father's shop and is threatening to shut it down, and he's not doing well in his health and financially, and so it's, you know, if I lose the shop, I lose everything kind of thing. So it's very much also an immigrant tale of, like, trying to make it in what is essentially, you know, America,
yeah,
you know, the great melting pot, like. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like, a like I said, with the boroughs and everything like that, it seems kind of New York-y, but...
It's a little race-coded, you know.
A little bit.
I mean, the fire people are obviously sort of like Middle Eastern, Asian kind of thing. The water people are like black, Latino kind of thing. The clouds are white people, the, you know.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that in there. They disguise it some, but it's, you know, it's not in an offensive way. They're just trying to show cultural differences.
No.
But yeah, you can see what cultures they tried to select or at least pull from. But yeah, I kind of thought the same thing, though, that it was a bit middling, like not bad, but just kind of, it felt a bit predictable and just like, I think I know where this is going. They're going to win each other over. And just, I didn't ever feel challenged by the story. I appreciated the artwork and everything, but I just walked away. It was like not really that captivated by the characters as a whole, but just kind of like, eh. But again, I also thought it was right off the hit that was Inside Out. And I thought that it was just a little too close to what they were trying to do with that. And it's like, eh.
Trying to capture the same lightning bug or
something
like that.
Yeah, like instead of them being emotions, what if they're elements? And it's like, I don't know. It just, it's, to me, maybe I'm wrong. I thought thematically it was a little too close to like that. And it's like, we just saw this. Like, we literally just,
that was
your last movie you just did.
Right.
I don't know.
And again.
Yeah. So, hey, whatever. Pixar is a very well recognized and adored studio. So they're not going to be home runs, but. Whatever. Did you walk away? How do the kids think about it? That's my other.
We've watched it 11 times this last week because again and again and again and again.
Yeah. That's why I don't talk about Night at the Museum on here. I've heard it in the background in my sleep 40,000 times.
I mean, you know, but it's okay because in next week it'll be a completely different movie that we've seen again. I'm sure, you know. At some point, we'll circle back to K-pop Demon Hunters.
Yeah, I still have not jumped on that one.
No, you got to do
that. That movie is just, I think it is the most watched thing on Netflix ever. It's officially risen the charts. Actually, Netflix is weird. They don't release their box office information because they don't.
Unless it's really good.
No. They don't want to pay people residuals because when you strike a deal with Netflix, it works a little bit different in terms of streaming. So they just tell you, oh, well, how did my movie do? They're like, oh, it did really well. It did really well. And they're like, why can't you just tell us how many people watched the movie so I can negotiate better? Oh, that's why.
There we go.
So they don't release, but there's other people that estimate it, box office, just because theaters want to have to report that kind of stuff. And so they had a number one hit on their hands in terms of K-pop Demon Hunters when it was released in theaters for a hot second.
Oh, sure.
But they, so good on them. So that movie was also not only the most watched thing on Netflix, but it also dethroned Weapons. For 1 week at the box office after being at Netflix.
And also, now that they've released it in theaters, they can get nominated for Emmys and Oscars and all that stuff.
That's,
I mean,
the other
if
part.
You think one of those K-pop songs is not going to show up for Best Original Song, you are not paying attention.
I think they bought a theater out in like California somewhere,
New Mexico, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So they can air things at their own. So they can just nominate them for Oscars, which smart on them, but it also gets to the point of right when movie studios start to own movie theaters. It's not a good thing for everybody.
It sounds like the glory days.
But yeah.
You can the see, good old times.
You can see how that might be problematic, though, for certain regions. You're like,
I mean,
Michael's old time.
Just twirling my handlebar mustache.
Bro, who was it that was saying, like,
let's put the ink on the deal, sweetheart.
Yeah, I know.
I'll put you in the pictures.
I'll put you in the pictures. Michael was saying, who was it that was saying that? They were saying that back in the day, it was easy because they would sit, these giant land barons would sit in their dumb castles twirling their mustaches in secrecy. And now these assholes got to be liked, too. It's so true. Anyways, yeah. What do you want to rate Elemental? You want to keep talking about it, or
no? I
told y'all it's light lifting today.
Yeah. I think that pretty much sums it up. It's, you know, it's about as middle of the road Pixar as you can get. So I'm gonna give it one tiny little blue flame.
I will give it steam heat. You got steam heat. That's my show tune-y sing-songy stuff.
There we go.
Well, on that note, let's pivot. Let's take a break from our sponsor, Mackay Pfeiffer. We'll be right back.
Sponsor Mackay Pfeiffer, from Brandy and Monica to 8 Mile.
That's right.
All right, my brother, I have a all-important question for you. I need to ask, what you been watching, sir?
Well, sir, now that it hit streaming again, I have rewatched The Thunderbolts.
Ooh, I just saw that for the first time on streaming.
Oh my goodness, how did that work out?
How does that work?
Well, I've spoken about it before, and I saw it several times in theaters as well. I am a big fan of this movie, actually. I think it is one of, I'm a little bit disappointed in the fact of it didn't do, I mean, it wasn't like a, I guess it was a bit of a flop at the box office, but not like some major standards, but it didn't
do as well as they expected.
Yeah. But I don't think that has anything to do with the quality of the movie, though.
I would agree with that.
I think the director is very competent.
Mm-hmm.
He is officially filming X-Men, and I think they did a phenomenal job in
like the reboot X-Men.
Yeah, new X-Men. Yeah, like MCU X-Men. And I think he is a great choice for it. I think this was like, hey, can you bring this on time, on schedule, and show a little flair for it within the Marvel system? And I think he did a great job of that. And I can get into why, but I've kind of explained my thoughts on Thunderbolts. I really appreciate the mental health aspect of it.
Okay.
I thought that was a really smart decision on their part.
I agree. Very poignant, very timely.
Yeah. So I'm curious what your thoughts were on Thunderbolts more than anything. So I ask you, what you been thinking?
Well, you were talking earlier about how it didn't do quite as well financially as they expected. And I think the reason for that is, at its heart, it's a lot of tertiary characters that maybe even casual fans of the Marvel Universe have never seen before. Like, you know, why are we getting Bobo, Captain America? Who's Ghost Lady? You know, I've never seen Quantumania. I've never seen Ant-Man and the Wasp. I didn't watch The Black Widow. You know, like, there's all these different elements of, essentially, like, they're all outcasts, which makes sense for the movie. But to the casual viewer or somebody who's maybe not in the know, you know, in the comic book realm, it's a bunch of people they've never met before trying to do something that they don't care about. So I think probably that might have hurt them financially. That might be a big cause of why it didn't do quite so well.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. It is a bit of, they were ancillary characters in the sense of, like, and Taskmaster was not, I mean, she's not in it very long, spoiler alert. We're spoiling it, by the way, if you haven't seen it. But she's not in it very long, but she wasn't really well received in her portrayal in Black Widow. Florence Pugh, who carries this movie, it is largely her movie.
Big time.
Yeah, I mean, emotionally, she's phenomenal in this movie. I said that word a couple times now, but I truly believe it. I think she is She deserves an Oscar, maybe not for this movie, but she is going to win one in her lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
She's
yeah.
really, really
It's a certainty,
talented.
Right.
Yeah. She seems very cool, too, in every interview I ever see. But no, it's very much so her movie, but like you were saying, though.
Well, I would also say David Harbour does a good bit of lifting in this movie, too. Just being, he's very much the comedic pratfall to her straight man character.
Somebody said about David Harbour, and I may have said this on the previous podcast, but something along the lines of they don't write funny lines for David Harbour. They give him lines and he says them funny.
Right. Yeah.
What was it? They don't have him say funny lines. They give him lines and he says them funny. Yeah. And so that to me was very, it's not a joke. It's just be enthusiastic about joining a team. It's like roll. And he, and it's like he believes it in his heart of hearts. Right. So he's really good at what he does in playing the Red Guardian, where he's not so stupid that he's
not a bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
He definitely has an undeserved sense of ego and capability.
There's a bit of goon in there. he's not a legendary stat. There's a little bit of just being a goon, Right. A super-powered one at that. But yeah, much like with Captain America, Brave New World, that was a sequel to a bunch of movies that nobody really asked for. It was a sequel to the redheaded stepchild of the MCU, which is The Incredible Hulk,
right.
Which actually I like that movie, but it is what it is.
Right.
It's a sequel to that. It's a sequel to The Eternals, and like just a bunch of plot threads that were just kind of left over from a lot of things that they threw into a stew and then shot a bunch of reshoots over. It's like Anthony Mackie can care. Like, he's a very charismatic guy, but how many times are you going to watch him talk to nobody on screen on a cell phone? You know what I mean? Like,
he and Giancarlo Esposito were not on the same set at any point.
Yeah, and same thing with the leader. He's just like, there are so many shots of somebody just talking on a cell phone to somebody else in reaction shots. You're like, man, this is just reshot to hell. So, but it's not kind of the same thing here. This took a lot of, which was the point of this movie, to take a bunch of ancillary characters and put them together into a team to rise up to be better than the sum of your parts. And like what the age old question of what does it mean to be a hero?
Right.
So I really dug it thematically. I like how they repivoted into New Avengers. Somebody had a theory that it failed because they didn't lean into Sentry heavily enough. Well, we want to see superhero antics. And it's like, let's see the golden Superman. Can we see more of that guy, please, in the trailers?
What if Superman has had a real big bipolar disorder and just forgot to take his meds one day?
But the problem is there's not enough shots of him being Sentry to really give it away. They give just enough away where it's like, they could have leaned into it a little more.
They
like,
could
hey,
have,
by
yes.
the way.
They could have, yeah.
a golden
yeah.
god figure in
I,
this.
I would have liked to, you're right, They do sort of bring him out, and then his turn happens very quickly. I would have liked to seen him maybe engaging a little bit of superhero actions, saving people, like literally pulling cats out of trees, stuff like that, then the turn could happen. But there's already so much chuffa in this movie. Like there's a lot you could already trim out. So like
I don't
to
think
add
so,
more,
man. I really don't think so.
Their whole meet cute in the facility that was going to get blown up, like as soon as
there's
a
range, that's not a meet cute.
Well, but whatever you want to call it, like the like, are we on the same side or are we not? Like that kind of thing. There was a lot of wasted material there. I think you could have cut.
Not a lot.
Like a few key scenes, a few scenes that didn't really add anything to the tension.
See, I disagree. There's a lot in that sequence that shows even the order of when there's a knife that gets thrown, right? Mm-hmm. And that knife bounces around. It goes through the exact order of who's there to kill who. And it's a scene that most people don't really pay attention to.
I like that.
Like the knife goes to John Walker, and then it goes to this person who throws it at Ghost, who Ghost then throws it at Taskmaster. Taskmaster then throws it back to John Walker. It's like,
right.
And then it goes back to Yelena, and she's like, God damn it. So there's a lot in that I really liked that sequence in terms of they're all here, like it's them realizing, oh no, we're supposed to just be destroyed here.
Right.
And so, but I appreciated that. I don't know, man, the mental, to pivot back to what we brought up initially, I really appreciated the mental health aspect of this movie. I really liked the way that they took on the Sentry in the terms of he was very John Walker's kind of unlikable. And he just tells him, like, dude, you're an asshole. Like,
yeah.
And he just kind of laughs at him. He's like, you're an ass, dude. What is your problem? And the idea that this guy was seeking something more and bit off way more than he could bargain for. And again, it plays back into that thematically of who is worthy to be a hero and can we manufacture these people? I mean, the plot threads of building a suit of armor and trying to recreate a super soldier serum have been largely used, I mean, are still being used throughout Marvel comic books today. Why do you think the Hulk was playing with gamma radiation?
Right. It all comes back to these two focal points.
And invincible suits of weaponized armor. Like it kind of largely comes back to those things and AI as well of like, oh, if Friday can program this, and what about Edith? And what about Jarvis? And what about the Vision? And so those two plot points have kind of reached and they're still going to continue because they're just, you know, just kind of ripe, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, it really does boil back to my original point of who is worthy to be a hero and what if these things were to fall in the wrong hands. And this is the ultimate case of what if we give someone godlike powers that is mentally unstable. And poor Bob. He's really likable in this. Shout out to Lewis Pullman. I really liked him as Bob and the Sentry as well. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, he's kind of meek and kind of a wise ass, but very meek, very humble as Bob Reynolds. And then as soon as he turns into the Sentry, you kind of see that like he carries himself different, you know, like it almost in a Christopher Reeve kind of way.
Yeah, no, that's a fair.
I mean, before the horse accident.
I assumed so.
He definitely carried himself different after that.
Poor Christopher Reeve. He was Superman.
Yeah, I'm sure he's, well, I'd say rolling over in his grave, but we both know that's not happening.
Yeah, and that's what you call tripling down. what did you, because I also was a big fan. That's when I started to get back into comic books was around the time of the New Avengers. Mm-hmm. But that was a different team. That was Luke Cage and Iron Man and Spider-Man. It was a hell of a squad.
Yeah, it was.
And the Sentry joined pretty shortly after. And his, without getting into his backstory or anything, he's a pretty complicated character of being a hero the whole time, and then the world forgets he exists, and blah 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 blah. But he's a badass character, and he's was written to rival Superman. So Superman can beat anybody. He just same with Hyperion, the person who created Hyperion in the Marvel comic books is like, no, actually, if authors are true, I wrote and created this character to beat Superman. So,
right.
So no.
Right, like, right, right. So I win.
Whatever he can't, whatever you say, like, no, that's the ultimate, like, doesn't matter.
So. It's like, remember when you used to play, like, cops and robbers and stuff, and you like
says, be like,
I shot you. I dodged it, or I got on my force field, and you're like, all right, well now we're playing.
Yeah, we're not playing.
Well, I pull out my laser gun then. Okay, well I pull out my bigger laser gun.
Yeah, got a laser gun, laser absorber reflector. Right. Yeah, yeah. So
I'm a cloak of invisibility.
Right. So I'm a big fan of Sentry, and I liked the fact that in the third act. This was one of my, we talked about Fantastic Four where the surfing sequence with Johnny trying to shoot the Silver Surfer while they're birthing Franklin Richards is one of my favorite sequences in all of Marvel. I actually think this is one of my favorite third acts in all of Marvel. And that's just me where I'm coming from. I really, again, I've said it before, I really like the mental health aspect of it. And I like that in too many times what Marvel's gotten in trouble for recently is one, they have a villain problem where the villain is just utterly forgettable.
Right.
Or it's like they write one or two lines of dialogue to kind of help you understand where they're coming from, but then there's nothing memorable after that. They're just, oh, I must do this for my own purpose. It's like I kind of understood in the Marvels like why her planet got destroyed, and it's like, well, F that.
Right.
Steal somebody else's oxygen. Fuck that.
Right, right.
It's like I get it, but in this one, understanding Bob, you don't really get the full story of what goes on. You just get pieces of why he's so broken, and what he was searching for is to be a better person and to try to, like, I don't know, I was out of drugs. People prey upon the vulnerable. That's just that's just what happens in every aspect of life. The vulnerable will get used. And so this guy who is vulnerable and is not necessarily a bad guy, but just seriously troubled and never really had the time to, with this villain, he truly is just misunderstood. And there's a side of him that has a physical manifestation. Now, you have given the worst of all of us, that little voice inside of us that says all these terrible things about, like, what if I just swerve into traffic right now? Like, all that crazy stuff that you dismiss, hopefully, if not, reach out, you know, all that stuff that we think and try to dismiss, what if that had a physical manifestation with unlimited power?
Yeah. Literally the void, the thing that's, that's eating up all your confidence, all your capabilities, all of your happiness, the thing that goes like, but do you deserve it? Are you good enough? Are you, why not just cause misery and pain? Because you're fucking miserable and in pain anyway. So just spread that around. Just do it. Just do it.
And
do
they're, the set designer and score of this, or I think there's, some, I don't know, there's a couple people that worked on Everything Everywhere All at Once as well. And there's actually a lot of parallels between that movie in terms of the all-encompassing black donut in the void, or black bagel, not donut, the bagel of nothingness and the void in this one. There's a lot of parallels, and so I think that's why it kind of speaks to me. But why I liked this third act so much is Marvel, I mentioned, has a villain problem. One, I didn't feel like the Sentry was necessarily a villain. The Void certainly was.
Sure.
But they also have this just CGI effect of let's more lasers and more this. And then if they get the magic MacGuffin thing, then and it's too much of that.
Then we can reverse our science.
And in this one, what they did, they go, no, instead of more CGI, what we're going to do in the third act is we're going to build more practical sets. And we're going to go from set to set to set and make practical things. Because they established very early on, you, at least this group of people, is not punching their way out of the scenario.
Right.
They got quick worked.
Right.
Quick worked. And that was him being merciful. He could have just thrown dude out the window and said bye forever.
When they finally bring in the Sentry finally has his big reveal and the entire team tries to attack him and he's just, I mean, beating the brakes off him.
Yeah.
I mean,
effortlessly.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that it became, we cannot punch our way out of this. Mm-hmm. So what is the other option? And instead of going more special effects, they go, let's do less special effects. Which is granted, there's still some in there, but let's use them more effectively and build real sets. Like when Yelena's in her void and she runs through, she actually hits the set wall. Bonk, and then she has to find
a way
out.
And then they turn the camera and then she's, you know, she was running through the wall. Now she's crawling up through the floor kind of thing.
Yeah. And like, so stuff like that, I really appreciated. And just going from these misery rooms to misery rooms and her just being like, okay, kind of saying what the audience is thinking is like, so we're just going to go from misery room to misery room for the rest of eternity right now. Is that what we're doing? And he's like, I don't know. You just find a room that's more tolerable than the rest.
Right.
And like so much of that, I just related to it on such a level of like, man, I've been there, you know?
Yeah. It's constant deferment. It's constantly like, okay, I can deal with this level of misery or this level of, you know, internal whatever.
The devil you know kind of thing.
Yeah. Like as long as I don't have to deal with that over there, then this is acceptable.
Right. And so I really related to it, and I thought that it was a, they use the actual visual medium very well to express an emotion that I very much so relate to, as I've been pretty open about some of my mental health things. We kind of started the show with a little bit of that too. So that's why I thought it might be appropriate to speak on this. But I appreciated the physical representation of that on screen. So that's why this movie resonated so much with me and why I don't think that this movie struggled financially due to the lack of quality of the film. I think it is a fine movie. I really don't have, there's little things I can nitpick here and there, but largely I think it was a higher quality Marvel movie than what has been put out recently. And I appreciate the fact that they're making a swing back to making quality over quantity.
Yes.
Just as a franchise.
Right.
And I thought that carried over into Fantastic Four First Steps, which again, wasn't as big as a box office hit as they wanted it to be, but was still a success, you know? So I feel like Thunderbolts being this kind of the meta story around it being this little kind of scrappy team that gets us back to where we want to be. I kind of like that aspect of it too, just in the real world. So my appreciation for the movie as itself kind of goes bigger than what is just actually put on screen. So
it works on a lot of different levels. It in terms of they really needed to do a really grounded, singular movie about a group of people, as opposed to, you know, something like the Eternals, where it's this like far, you know, far expanding mythological time spanning, you know, love story. Like we can't be doing it all that, you know, and then trying to bring it instead of releasing on a streaming service where now you have to watch Captain America and Winter Soldier to really understand what happens in Brave New World. And you have to watch WandaVision to really understand what's going to happen in Multiverse of Madness, just making a singular story of We're not attaching it to anything else in the Marvel universe other than it takes place in that universe.
This movie still has a bit of that homeworky feel, but they also do a good enough job of going like, here's a group of fuck-ups.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The only real big tie-in to the main MCU is that they're using the Thunderbolts Tower is ostensibly the abandoned Avengers Tower or Stark Tower.
Yeah. Yeah. I did also like the opening sequence. There's a really cool shot, which like shadows is thematically all throughout this movie, and they use them expertly. Even when the void, Sentry turned void, turns people into the void, like the shadows, it's always cast a long shadow, so they can never shoot it directly overhead, because then it's just, if the light source is
flat.
It'd just be a flat spot. So they use rotoscoping for like a single frame of animation because they're like, we don't want to do CGI. We don't want to make this big, like, whoa, like melting into the, it's just, let's get it done. Poof, 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 poof.
Right.
And I thought
it's almost apocalyptic or like nuclear. It's almost like they're there and then they weren't. It's like they were atomized, you know, like something out of Hiroshima or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's, you know, all that's left is their shadows cast on the streets.
Yeah, and that's opening sequence where Yelena breaks in when she's talking about how depressed she is.
Oh, where she breaks into the facility?
Opening sequence where she jumps off a building. It's like, maybe I'm just bored, and she dives off a building. Like, what a great monologue to open it. Even in that sequence when she breaks in, they do this overhead shot of casting these long shadows. And I remember being in the theater going, like, I've never seen that before. I've seen the overhead shots before. I've never seen the long shadows when someone crumbled. Like, that was a perfect... I guess like pretense to what was to come. I really like
foreshadowing.
Yeah, foreshadowing. There we go. Hey, long shadowing. Yeah, that was the word I was looking for. I liked that shot and the idea that she's so defeated by life that she's not even wearing armor anymore. She's literally just like in a tracksuit, just being like, "Yeah, if I get shot, her work has just become so meaningless to the point where she's not even worried about her own well-being. It's just become ancillary. It's like, when's the last time you showered? When's the last time you did this? You know." And those are all kind of the telltale signs of somebody that is struggling. It's like, when's the last time? How long have you been in that tracksuit?
Right. Like,
she's not loaded up with weapons and all that. She's just, I'll improvise, she even says. I'll improvise.
I love that. Even when she's interrogating her, you know, she captures one of the guards and she's got them all tied up. And she's telling him, like, okay, so here's how it's going to go. I'm going to ask you a question. You're going to vehemently deny it and say you don't know anything. I'm going to threaten to torture you. You're not going to believe me. I'm going to really hurt you. Then you're going to kind of believe me. So you're going to give me a little piece of information. Not the information I'm looking for, but it's going to happen. And, like, he's just, like, tied up, his mouth gagged, and he's just like, why is this bitch trauma dumping on me right now?
Yeah, and then the scientist comes. He's like, you have a face that can open a scanner.
That's right.
Yeah. It's she's very good, man. Florence Pugh is the truth, and I like this character.
I like her a lot too. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree. She's definitely going to win some sort of like all sorts of accolades at some point. Yeah.
And her relationship with David Harbour and that struggle, and her just trying to relate of going like, what saves the day is her reaching out to Bob inside of the void, and it's like, hey, we can hug this out.
Yeah,
I thought was brilliant in the sense of you watch Bob sit there wail on himself, and it's this giant metaphor for like you hating yourself isn't going to solve this.
Sure.
You punishing yourself for all the shit that you feel is not going to solve this. You're simply you're punching a jar of jelly. You're just spreading it, my dude. Like, that's it.
Sure. Yeah. You
know? I like the fact that that's the only way of breaking through was via connection. Was it a little heavy-handed? Yeah, but to me, I didn't mind it. I kind of appreciated it, in fact. So,
that was really kind of the one thing that I bumped up against, and
really?
not because I dislike where it was going. I think structurally that makes sense. It just felt a little, I don't want to say unearned, because they definitely made the effort to get there, but maybe just the leap in terms of chronologically in the movie was too soon or too big. Like, how they went from, we got to beat, the logic of how they went to, let's just hug it out. I don't want to say it was forced, but it was too big of a leap from where the team was to how they got there. Does that make sense? I'm trying to, it's very difficult to explain.
I think I'm tracking what you're saying. It just, again, the logical side of your, I think what you're doing is what the same thing I did with Good Will Hunting. When okay. logically, I know at the end of that movie, when Robin Williams sits there and tells Matt Damon, like, hey, it's not your fault.
Right.
Like, I get what they're doing. That scene kind of annoys me. One, just because I, again, the logical side of my brain that knows that, like, I get what is happening. He's saying, dude, none of this is your fault. And right. he's having a hard time accepting that.
Right.
But the sequencing of events that led me from where I was just a minute ago to that don't add up. So yes. I think it may be a sequencing issue for you of like,
yes.
I get that that's where we're going. And I can accept that, yes, that is the plausible way to solve this current
right,
dilemma,
right.
but it didn't feel, it maybe felt out of step, like you skip, like you're playing a scale and you skip the note and you're like, wait a second, wasn't there
yeah,
something between this?
Something like that. Yes. I think that's a very good analogy for, which by the way, that scene in Good Will Hunting, I love, that's one of my favorite scenes of all time.
See, that's so one of my favorite scenes in Marvel. so again, I like, I'm not, it's not a bad thing about Good Will Hunting, but all of a sudden we're having a conversation and he's like, hey, it's not your fault. He's like, yeah, I know.
Right.
And me as an audience, I'm like, yeah, I know. I get that that's where we're going.
I can't be asked the same question three times yeah, in a row.
Exactly. So, yeah, that was one of my more favorite parts, actually.
Yeah, and I think you might have just hit the nail on the head in terms of what I was trying to explain. Just there was some misstep there that just it didn't quite sit right with me. Again, not because it wasn't earned. It just maybe was... You stepped over one of the steps.
I felt that way in a scene earlier. And I knew, like, again, we're trying to keep this under 2 hours. We don't need to spend a bunch of time in between, in the meantime and in between time. The only scene I really felt that with was after he disbanded the quote, the Thunderbolts at the time and just made, like, quick work of them.
Okay.
And he's sitting there talking to Julie Louis-Dreyfus, who has an equally annoying name in the...
Contessa Vanessa...
Fontana... Banana Lama Fofema. Yeah. De Allegra Fontaine, right? Whatever her name is, yeah. When he pivots from... Yeah, why do I need to listen to you? I felt like that kind of... Like, I knew we needed to get there for the void to come through.
Right.
And clearly, that's what you've been building to this whole time.
Right.
But I felt
is,
like...
Is Bob's
It was as soon as the fight was over, it's like, yeah, I'm not listening to you. Because again, I guess chemically, there was something... It makes sense chemically in the sense of like, I'm jacked up. Whatever that frontal lobe thing that,
right.
that regulates, most people like me... Our shit is hijacked, and so we yep. got we. Once that thing starts to break down, it you know you can go off the rails pretty quick. That right. mania sets in for this guy, or that dopamine rush.
More of this, more of this, more
yeah,
of this.
So he's
yeah.
like, I'm not listening to anybody. So I get that that's what happened, but again, in real time, it just looked like, oh, wait a second. We again, I get it, but yeah. So I can kind of see what you're saying, where you're at. I just didn't bump up against you in that scene at the end when
right.
they're like, I gotta get to Bob to let him know, because watching him sitting here punishing himself. He's been doing that his whole life. And clearly now he has a chance to physically assault and confront the thing that makes him feel this way. And it's just making
it
the
worse,
situation
right.
far much more worse. So maybe in that moment, again, I get goosebumps thinking about it. I really like this one. When she connects, when they find that connection, it made me cry, dude. I was like, I did not expect that. Like,
yeah.
I really liked it.
Yeah, again, it's a beautifully well-shot scene, and I get the emotional content of where they were going. There was just, for me, just a misstep. And that's not to be a detriment for the entire movie. I'm not saying that it ruins the movie. Just in that moment was the one thing that I kind of bumped up against. Other than that, I completely love this movie. I think it's a beautiful... It really recaptures the feeling of the first Avengers movie, where
it's
all these disparate people coming together, or not disparate, desperate people coming together. Sorry, I combined two words there for a second. And seeing how the team dynamic works in terms of everyone falling into their role and knowing exactly what they're supposed to do. This is sort of the flip side of that in terms of everybody thinks that they can do everything and it's all on them. And if they would just learn to fucking get along and work as a team, then they might actually accomplish something. But everyone in this team is like, well, if nobody else is going to do it, then I'll just take care of it. Who cares?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. There's so many movies, and these people have a reason to be short-sighted because life has kind of handed them a shitty deck of cards.
Sure.
So like, dude, every time I try to play nice with others, I end up alone. So
right.
like, let's just skip the formalities here, you know what I mean? So I bought in with these characters. a lot of times, and I was joking with a very good friend of mine. Shout out to you, Shecky. We were joking the other day about how many movies could be solved if somebody just had a conversation, if people weren't so short-sighted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It'd be like an episode of The Simpsons as opposed to, like, it'd be like 22 minutes. Like, we were using Karate Kid as an example, being like, I don't know, man, I just broke up with this girl. My heart's in shambles, and I see her with you, and it makes me very angry. Well, I'm new to town, and I don't have anybody, and she's the first person I found a connection with, but I still like her. Well, I do too, man. Well, do you want to fight about it? I mean, I guess we could, but what good is that going to do?
Or hear me out. Threesome.
Yeah. Oh, that didn't work either? Okay.
All right.
But again, you would get to the resolution within 20 minutes, whatever it may be, whether it be a threesome, you know, whatever.
Hey, how about we just ask her what she thinks and which guy she wants to spend time with? How about that?
Right.
How about we be respectful towards the lady? How about that? Instead of keeping all this macho bullshit about my karate's bigger than yours, but right. It's a metaphor for my penis.
Suddenly Bushido Brown shows up and they're like, shit. Now we must band together.
That's right.
That was somewhat in poor taste, but whatever. You know what I'm getting at. You know what I'm getting at. But I say all that to say, like, so many movies would be solved if people just weren't so short-sighted. But I bought into the reason why these characters were, like, not as willing to cooperate with them, not play nicely. You know, like, we've been roving around this whole time, you know, as they say. And what is this? I'm a lone wolf. Could this be? Three more lone wolves to roam the desert and do cocaine and hookers with? To join my pack?
We're going to be blood brothers.
Shout out to Zach Galifianakis. Underrated performance of the week goes to Zach Galifianakis.
Nobody in the movie that we've talked about.
I'll give it to Lewis Pullman as a sentry. Underrated performance of the week.
Okay.
And also Zach Galifianakis in The Hangover. He's pretty funny in that.
I'm sure they're both honored.
They should be. It's high prestige, man. Other than that, I just wanted to bring up the ending credits with you. There's two different ones. One being with Anthony Mackie suing the new Avengers, because as he's assembling his team, which is very comics accurate around this time, there was a mighty Avengers running around and a new Avengers running around.
That's right.
And then you see the Fantastic Four ship, this trans-dimensional ship, come into orbit.
I love it.
Yeah, I was all about it.
It's
New Avengers with a Z.
With a Z, you see. It is legally copyrighted.
He's so funny as Red Guardian.
He's so good. Just give him more of everything, man.
Yeah.
If he was in Jaws, I would cast him.
Yo! I want to see where you're going with this, but he would actually be good in Robert Shaw's.
I was just going to say, I would cast him as Quint.
Yeah, I could actually see that.
I could see that for sure.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but no, I had a vision. So I'm jacked up on Mountain Dew.
Or, no, you know what? I would cast him as, you remember the two idiots that, like, throw the Christmas or the ham on the hook and throw it out to sea, and then the dock gets taken away?
Yeah.
He would be one of those guys.
Yeah, he'd be the ham.
David Hambor.
Ah, well done. See, it writes itself. It writes itself around here.
We should get John Hamm.
He's got a bigger purpose, if you know what I mean.
He's got a lot of bigger things.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, what is our fascination with John Hamm? That needs to be studied one day. He's another person we were talking about. We just picked out. We're like, nope, this guy. He was in the town. We like him.
Because he's awesome. He's awesome in everything he's in.
Like, I've never seen a single minute of Mad Men. Not a single minute. Everyone's like, oh, you like Mad Men? Like, nope. Nothing to do with that.
I just like watching John Hamm do interviews, quite frankly. Like, that is a charming dude. Like, he is always affable. He's always, you know, very quick-witted. Like, I've never seen a bad interview where somebody walks away like, wow, he was kind of an asshole, right?
Yeah. He's got the glow about him. Just like, we like this dude. Again, we select.
He's hung like an Evian bottle, apparently.
We already know that. That's part of our play. Please come on the show, John Hamm. I will make Michael not
ask you
about
it. Show us your dick. Yeah,
That not on air, but, you know, we'll see.
Right.
Anyways.
Just for me.
I know, right? Anyways, though, other than that, I don't really got much. The ending sequence I liked, did you bump up against? I like the fact that there's Anthony Mackie's, the Falcon winners, or whatever his name is now, Captain Falcon.
Captain Falcon.
Assembling quietly a new team of Avengers.
I dig it, yes. It does the thing that I loved in the original Avengers where, you know, they show Thanos for the first time. And you're like, oh my God, I see where this is going. And then they show the Fantastic Four ship and you're like, oh my God, they're doing incursions. They're going to bring in the Beyonder. Like there's only one way this can end and it's going to be in Secret Wars. Oh my God.
Here's the thing is people are like, they haven't built up Dr. Doom enough. They haven't built him up enough.
They don't need to.
Well, here's the other thing is they didn't build the Infinity Stones. We didn't even know that they were Infinity. I mean, we did. Like comics accurate people knew where this was going. But they didn't really introduce Thanos. They showed him smile once or twice in the background at the end of a movie. And they're like, oh, okay, who is this guy? Like, they didn't really build him up. You didn't know shit about him as a character until Phase 3 of Marvel. Really until you got to Infinity War, which is the second to last of Phase 3 movies.
Right.
So, like, this idea that, oh, they're introducing Doctor Doom too late, like, I don't think so. They've been playing multiverse for as many movies now than they have introducing six stones. Like, I don't... So how much of an introduction do we need, really? I don't get
and
it.
And also, it's Robert Downey Jr. doing quite possibly the most compelling villain in all of Marvel history.
Oh, fiction shit.
I mean, Doctor Doom, in terms of major villains, is pretty hard to beat.
He's number one on a lot of lists, in my opinion, because he's more... His motivations aren't as pure as the Joker's, and that's what makes him a little bit more interesting, in my opinion. But usually the top three, in my opinion, it's Dr. Doom, Joker, and then probably get Magneto on that somewhere.
Yeah, Stan Lee once said that Dr. Doom's main motivation is he literally thinks he can change the world if he could just run it. And so basically he just wants to conquer the world. Now, the problem is that that's technically not illegal, so he's not doing anything that's out of, you know, the bounds of the law or, you know, logical convention, because he actually really does believe that, no, the world would be better in my firm iron grip.
He also has a point. He's grasping Grips-es. Rice Krispies treats. They snap, crackle, and pop away. The other thing, just now we're talking Dr. Doom, which we can do for hours.
That's right.
But the other thing is he also has a point. In the sense of there's some scenes in the comic book where they're like, oh, you're selfish and you're egotistical. He's like, my ego? Reed Richards has inventions that could have solved all these things for, you know, name the problem, forever. He keeps them to his family.
Right.
He's like, Storm could have stopped, you know, of the X-Men could have stopped famine and all this and dictated the terms of the weather forever. Nope, she chose to go colonize Mars. Is what she chose to do. He goes down the laundry list of this person.
Right.
Like, so yet I'm the selfish one, and here I am before you, warts and all, bearing it all, saying, yeah, I think I'm the guy.
Right.
So, like, maybe reconsider.
Right.
And it's like, well, he kind of does have a point. This guy hoards it all for his family, yet demands your terms in terms of tax breaks and all this. Should I run my own country? My people are fine. They eat for free. What's up, you know? It's like,
yeah, it's a tyrannical rule where nobody can talk shit about me. But other than that, it's pretty good.
No crime either.
Yep. So, nobody dares commit crime in Doom's reign.
Yeah, so I don't know. Well, what do you want to rate Thunderbolts?
Oh, man. I am going to give it 1 big group hug.
I'm going to second that rating.
With just a little bit of punching.
A little bit of punching. I'm going to rate it 2 taco shields.
Yeah, man. All right. So we got a little bit of free time. I'm having a good time. I don't want to. Let's just keep this party train a rolling.
I like it.
You want to maybe do a quick game and then we'll split out?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
You want to do, what you want to play? You want to play some, we could do 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon and pivot completely off.
How about we do, let's do blind rankings.
Oh,
I got a good idea for a blind ranking for you.
I'll do one for you first to keep it on theme, right?
Okay.
Let's do Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
Okay, so the rules of blind ranking is you're just going to list a movie, and then I have to put it on the list somewhere, and then that is where it remains.
Yep, we're going to go.
It cannot be changed.
Yep, and the blind ranking means you don't know what other movies are going to be on the list.
Right.
So, yeah. So let's just do that. We're just do it with Marvel Cinematic movies, okay?
Okay.
Let me make my list here. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And I'm going to randomly generate a movie.
Okay.
Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Out of 10?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give that I'm going to give that an 8.
Okay. All right. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That's the second movie.
That's one with Walton Goggins, right?
That is with Walton Goggins. And where you introduce Ghost. And then we didn't see her for a long time until this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Also, it's got Larry Fishburne's.
That's right.
That's right. That's right.
Michelle Pfeiffer's.
Oh, Michelle Pfeiffer's. That's right. Right. Oh, yeah. I'm going to give that I'll give that a 7.
7. All right. Ant-Man and the Wasp. Thor Ragnarok.
Ooh.
We're getting into top tier with that, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's probably... Oh, man. That might be a 5, maybe a 4. I'm trying to decide. Maybe a 5.
Really?
5.
Okay.
Yeah.
At 5, you have Thor 3. All right. All right. Thor Ragnarok. From there, let's go Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
I mean, I've already used up Space 9, right?
No. 9 and 10 are open.
Okay. I'll give it a 9. I'll give it a 9.
All right. Let's go directly into Thunderbolts.
Thunderbolts, that's going to be a 3 or 4.
Really?
Yeah. Let's go 4.
All right.
See, my problem is that I'm conserving my number one spot, but there's also a lot of really shitty Marvel movies in the lineup, so...
Yeah, you don't want to give it away too easily. Yeah, I hear you. All right. Well, up next we have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
That was the one with Ego, right?
Yes.
Has spot 5 been taken?
By Thor Ragnarok.
Ah, shit. I would switch those. Okay.
Too bad.
Yep. All right. I'll give that one 4.
I was just taking my Thunderbolts.
Never mind. I'll give that 6.
There you go. All right. And again, let's ask for a random generator. We have Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Oh, that's going to be number 1.
Okay. I thought that might be the answer there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really, really good movie.
Yep. It's probably universe. I said you can't be mad if that one ends up at number 1 for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, you got 2, 3, and 10 left. Black Panther is going to be your next option.
2, 3, and 10?
2, 3, and 10 are left.
I'll give Black Panther 3.
Okay.
But I might regret that decision because depending on what comes down next.
Yeah, let's see here. We have Iron Man 3.
That's going to be number 2.
Number 2?
Yeah.
All right. And finally, for your number 10 slot, you are going to have The Eternals.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely number 10. Yeah, okay, I feel good about that. Okay, that worked out, actually.
It's weird. Okay, here's my analogy for The Eternals, is that if we're just talking about kung fu movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is more Once Upon a Time in China than it is Police Story by Jackie Chan, right? Where it is still considered a Marvel movie, but it is still like this long, sweeping epic, right?
Sure.
So that's more my
weird. It's like a space opera kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So your order of your blind rankings is going to be Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Okay.
Iron Man 3 at number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Black Panther at number 3.
I probably would have switched those two.
Okay. Thunderbolts at number 4.
Okay.
Thor Ragnarok at 5.
Yep.
Guardians 2 at 6.
Okay.
Ant-Man and the Wasp at 7.
Okay.
Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness at 8. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings at 9. And Eternals at 10.
I actually feel more comfortable with that list than I thought I was going to.
Yeah.
It actually kind of worked out.
There's a couple of switches
up. You know what? I did a good job.
Yeah, not bad for a blind ranking.
I rule.
There you go. Well, yeah.
All right, brother. So let me turn the tables around on you and ask you a question, sir.
All right.
All right. Here's your blind ranking. It's going to be comic book movies, but not necessarily Marvel movies.
10-4. 10-4.
Okay. So this is going to stretch across all different companies, different
productions. Eras. Gotcha. Yes, gotcha. Exactly. Gotcha.
All right. So first one, From Hell.
Oh.
Starring Johnny Depp.
Man, I'll put that at a... I'm comfortable putting that at a solid 7.
Okay. Solid 7 for that one.
Uh-huh.
All right.
I'll keep the list over here if you want.
Okay, that's fine. Next, we got X-Men 3.
Oh.
And this is the... Was it Bryan Singer?
Yeah. I thought it was X-Men United or whatever. So, that's got to be... I'll put that...
No, X-3 was the Final Stand.
Oh, that's right. All right, that's right. I'll put that at number 9.
Okay. Next, we have Blade 2, directed by Guillermo del Toro.
I am comfortable with that.
Starring Donnie Yen.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Who else is in there?
I feel like that's a solid 5. I could put that there. Right. That's feel like that's a good middle point.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, I dig it. After that, we have The Watchmen by...
That's actually not a bad adaptation. You're talking about the Zacky Snyder's one?
Yes. I was going to say Alan Moore, but yes, Zacky Snyder's.
Yeah, it's not a bad adaptation. I think just by nature of the story, a lot of it's just kind of lost in a different medium. I'll give that a 6.
All right. After that, we have the Edgar Wright directed Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Ooh. That's a pretty fun movie, man. That's going to be 3.
Starring Michael Cera. Not married. Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
There's a couple. Yeah. Aubrey Plaza's in that.
Anna Kieran Kendrick. Culkin. Not trying to lead you on.
No. I'm comfortable with that being a number 3.
Okay.
That can't be.
All right. After that, we have Sin City, directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, man. I think that's got to be number 2.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm comfortable with that being number 2.
Okay.
After I think that's one of the better comic book adaptations, ever.
I mean, it does a good job of just,
straight from the panel.
Yeah.
Almost a little too much.
So he just posted up the comic book page and was like, that's our storyboard
there. It's a motion comic, it feels like.
Let's see. After that, we have The Mask. Jim Carrey, 1995.
That's actually a good comic book movie. That ain't actually another good comic movie is The First Men in Black.
I almost put that one on the list, actually.
I'm going to put that not necessarily as a slight. I'm going to put that at 8.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not even... I'm just running out of slots here.
Okay. So what do we got so far?
1, 4, and 10.
1, 4, and 10. Okay. So it's got to be... Okay. So the next one is going to be Superman 2. Neil before Zod.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen that movie, to be honest with you. I'm gonna put it at number 10 only because they fired Richard Donner from finishing that movie. So there's some tonal shifts that I remember being like, is this a comedy or is this an
Yeah. All right. Next on the list, we have the Batman 66 movie.
Oh, I'll put that at number 4, dude. I love that movie.
Okay. Where all the villains come together and.
Yeah. I like that. Okay.
Dehydrate the world nations or the United Nations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. After that, we have Constantine.
Well, it has to be number 1 now, which I'm not pissed about.
Keanu Reeves, again, takes the number 1 spot.
Yeah, I'm not too mad about that. So I got Constantine at 1, Sin City at 2, Scott Pilgrim at 3, Batman 66 at 4, Blade 2 at 5, Watchmen at 6, From Hell 7, The Mask 8, X3, The Final Stand, and Superman 2 at 10. I'd switch a couple of those.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Probably Superman would be a little bit higher.
Probably
X3 would probably be way down at the bottom.
Yeah, that should be 10. That would be 10. Yeah. And 1 would probably be, of this list, probably be Sin City.
Okay. So not too drastic of changes.
Yeah, nothing too bad. Nothing too bad. The rest I can live with.
All right.
So, well, I appreciate it. Yeah, a little blind ranking to close us out today.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was, man. So, fun game to play. A little trendy, but hey, whatever. We got our own things to do.
I mean, anything to keep the wolves at bay, sir.
I know, right.
Keep the void back far, far in my mind rooms.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed the Thunderbolts, though, truly. I've been waiting for you to watch that one. So.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I liked that one.
Well, cool. Well, in the meantime and in between time, I appreciate you being here with us today. Got some cool things coming in. Again, keep us on your thoughts and minds when it comes to the YouTube thing.
Yes, please.
We're at WBW Podcast. Just give us a like, give us a subscribe, wherever you are on any platform. We appreciate any listens, any sharing that you do with your friends.
Rate, review,
to grow,
all that
whatever.
Stuff.
Yeah. So we appreciate everything. We're just trying to, you know, put in the hard work, put in the dedication so we can officially sell out like we joked about earlier.
For you, the legions.
That's right. That's right. Well, I guess in the meantime and in between time, we recommend that you go watch a movie
and talk about it with somebody that you love. Who pooped in the chili? It was me.